As ransomware threats gain in volume, smart organizations are taking steps to keep hackers out. Today, we're going to look at some of the top ways hackers are getting in to your system to hit you with ransomware and what you can do about it. That's next. This is the Cyber 24 podcast presented by Valcom. And welcome to the Cyber 24 podcast, the weekly pod dedicated to helping business leaders and governmental leaders like you better understand the often intimidating topic of cybersecurity so you can make better and more informed decisions for your organization. We also look at interesting cybersecurity stories in the news and help make sense of them and see what lessons you can take from the cybersecurity incidents other organizations have experienced. I'm Marty Carpenter, and I work in strategic communication, public affairs, and general problem solving. I'm joined today by our panel of cybersecurity experts and Cyber 24 friends of the pod, Dan Schuyler from Valcom and Anthony Boyce from Sophos. Gentlemen, thanks for taking some time to be with us again this week.
Marty, thanks for having us back.
All right. So in the news this week, a little bit of a look at some of the most popular ways hackers are accessing everyone's data, a company's data, their system, getting in and throwing ransomware on there in particular. I'd love to just kind of walk through some of these with you, because when these guys are successful, it causes all kinds of headaches, from paying the ransom to dealing with regulators, not to mention getting your data back so your business can survive, and trying to do that in a timely enough manner that you can kind of keep the wheels of commerce turning. Lots of different stats about how big of an issue ransomware has become, but whether they're, it's an increase of 100% or 120% or whatever it may be, none of it shows that ransomware is a declining problem. They show only that it's getting worse. So ZDNet in particular looked at the ways, top ways hackers are getting into your system so they can hit you with ransomware. And let me just list out the top four, and then we can go through each one of them. The top one is an RDP compromise, 47%, nearly half the time. That is the attack vector. Phishing emails, 26%, a vulnerability exploit, 17%, and an account takeover, 10% of the time. So let's start here first, maybe with some definitions, and then why you think that this is an attractive way for a hacker to get into or to get access to your data or to your network. Let's start with the RDP compromise. Dan, let's maybe start with you. Can you give us just a general overview of what an RDP compromise is and why that is such an effective, apparently effective way for a cyber criminal to gain access to something he or she should not have access to?
Sure. So RDP stands for Remote Desktop Protocol. It's a Microsoft protocol that allows one machine to remotely connect to another machine. And unfortunately, it's been plagued with problems its entire life, primarily with a lack of security controls built into RDP itself. A lot of hackers are getting through, are getting onto a network or onto a system through RDP through what's called brute force attacks, where they're trying several different passwords and trying to find a password that will allow them to access that server. They're also taking advantage of built-in vulnerabilities in the RDP protocol. And so if you are using an RDP server or you're using a Windows machine that hasn't been patched lately, then those RDP vulnerabilities probably exist. And they're also using credential harvesting. So they're looking for RDP credentials that potentially exist and using those to gain access. So RDP in and of itself is one of the most used protocols for remotely accessing another computer, but it does have some inherent vulnerabilities built into it that are in its protocol. And so a couple things folks can do is make sure that they're using strong passwords, secure passwords, make sure that they're using an RDP server that's been updated and patched, and making sure that their RDP connection is secure as well, so that they're connecting using a VPN instead of just connecting directly to that other computer via a unsecure connection over the internet. So use a VPN, use a strong password, use an RDS server that has been patched and doesn't have any vulnerabilities.
Can you help me understand, and Anthony, feel free to jump in here. Can you guys help me understand? I don't think that I have ever in my career used, at least knowingly, an RDP setup, a remote desktop. I remember maybe 10 years or so that someone would say, yeah, I can, you know, VPN or something into my computer and I can control my desktop from home. But I think for a lot of people who hear about that, unless I'm misunderstanding what this is, and that is highly probable, doesn't the fact that you keep so many files in the cloud and you can access them on whichever computer and so on, like I can't think of anybody I know who uses something like that. Are they really very common, or do I just totally misunderstand what they are?
Yeah, they're actually quite common, Marty. It's RDP is used every single day in organizations throughout the globe. It's a there's still quite a lot of I would say that you're pretty edgy in the sense that that you are a new adopter. You are a person who will, I mean, just like the conversations we've had previously, adopt two-factor authentication. You'll use a password safe. You will use cloud services. So often, Dan and I come across organizations that still run legacy or older on-premise servers and applications and server offerings that it's tough for an organization to break away from, because they've got a lot of money invested in those tools, and it's just tough to say, all right, I'm just going to move it to the cloud. For one, I've got to wait for the vendor to offer that, and then two, I've got to do the migration, and then three, I've got to kind of retool the way that we're accessing these services. So it's still easy to have a server, and like Dan mentioned, RDP is built into Windows. It's already there, and for years they've offered RDP servers, and so a lot of organizations still use it. Now, you also have a lot of admins that have done some pretty lazy things, and what do I mean by that? It's exposing RDP to the internet. Now, Dan touched on some very solid points about kind of locking that down, about getting access through a VPN, you know, get on the network first before you get access to the RDP. But there's a lot of sort of legacy configurations out there that some admins may not even be aware of because they've inherited said settings and whatnot. And so there are quite a lot of organizations that still use RDP that still have it accessible out to the outside world. Now, even at home in my own environment, if I want to get access to my computer downstairs, because sometimes I just need to get access to the computer and the files that are there, I personally use RDP in my own house. Now, I'm probably a bit of an anomaly, but I'm going to guess that those that are probably listening to this podcast, they probably use RDP too, or have at least, at home or at work. And so a lot of today's newer technology negates the need for it, admittedly. And also, you're going to be seeing a technology that we're going to be talking about probably pretty soon on the pod called ZTNA. And so that's the Zero Trust Networking. And through ZTNA, we can kind of negate some of these, needs to necessarily remote onto a server to get access to corporate resources. But that'll be for a topic for another time.
Yeah. It just seems to me that if it's, what I'm hearing is it's sort of an aging or ancient or becoming ancient technology and a way to move around. I understand that some enterprises are so large that they have to turn like an aircraft carrier and not a speedboat. But if I'm an executive at one of these organizations and I got the sense that that's sort of a cumbersome or slower or aging way to do things, and then I hear the statistic that almost half, 47%, of all ransomware attacks come because of RDP vulnerabilities, that might expedite my movement to try something different.
Sure. Let me throw this one out there. I'm going to say that 40% of people or 50% of people not wearing a seatbelt get ejected from their car in an accident. It doesn't mean stop driving your car. It doesn't mean you know, definitely wear a seatbelt, right? Put in those safety measures and those precautions. Now, that statistic is saying that there are a lot of people out there that have got RDP exposed to the outside world. Lock that down. The RDP inherently isn't necessarily the concern per se, but the security measures placed around access to RDP, that's where the big concern is. So absolutely lock it down and get rid of it if you need to and if you have to. But if you're pretty dependent on it, then there's a couple of things you just want to make sure that you've got in place, again, like locking down RDP to not be accessible through the outside world on your firewall, and maybe allow only RDP to be accessible through VPN and maybe from a subset of IPs. But yes, you're hitting the nail on the head there, Marty.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Don't necessarily throw out your RDP system just because of this. It's a simpler step to just put in the right security measures. But still, 47%, I mean, you're at the top of the list there. That's not an insignificant number. The second thing on the list is phishing email. We've talked about phishing a good amount on the podcast in previous episodes. Dan, phishing, as an attack vector, did this become an easier target for hackers because everyone got pushed to remote work, or is phishing just been a problem for a long time and it's going to be as long as people are gullible and have jobs?
Both. Unfortunately, both. Yes. I mean, clearly the move to remote work has increased the vulnerability. But again, phishing email is the number one attack vector for most hackers right now because it's easy to do. There's millions of people out there getting email and it has a high percentage of success. So it's easy, millions of people, high percentage of success. If you're a hacker, those are golden words to you. And so unfortunately, phishing email has been and will continue to be the bane of existence for cybersecurity architects trying to stop those data breaches from happening vis-a-vis phishing emails.
So the next thing on the list is vulnerability exploit at 17%. And I'm wondering, is the difference between something like a phishing email as an attack or as your way to get the data compared to a vulnerability exploit or an RDP compromise, is that rather than looking for some kind of coding issue, you think of the hacker in the basement with the dark screen and all that. Phishing is like, I'm just looking for a sucker, right? I'm just looking for someone who will tell me something they shouldn't. And the others are maybe require a little more level of sort of back-end espionage or subterfuge to get a hold of what you want. Am I thinking about that the right way?
Yeah, so I would actually say that exploit vulnerabilities are almost the same. And here's where I'm going to draw the correlation and the connection. Is it's the vulnerability of the human element, right? That's what phishing is. It's you found a vulnerability. I mean, you exploited me, the human, through my own vulnerability of, oh, I like cat videos, you know, boom, click, done. Or hey, quickly, due to urgency, send me this money or do this thing or whatever it may be. So I would say that the phishing is actually sort of the exploit of the human side of the house. But yes, over on the exploit side of the house, from a technology perspective, you start taking a look at vulnerabilities that are built into or that are being exploited in the code or in a process of a chain of events that are actually happening. So just as an example, there's a thing called code caving, which is an exploit. You can kind of get into some empty space in an application, and you can start performing some functions inside of that application. So it looks like a legitimate app, but then once it's loaded, you've actually loaded some code in that empty space or a pivot, doing a pivot off a stack pivot from one stack in the technology stack and in the code stack and pivoting over to a different one. And so there's these things called these exploits. And so they are actually the folks that are really deep digging. They're digging, they're trying to find some kind of application. They're trying to find some kind of vulnerability in an operating system, and they're trying to exploit that vulnerability in whatever way they can to get onto your machine, to get to your environment, to start infecting you from that perspective.
That's just another reason why it's so critical not to push off those Windows updates, those Windows patches, those Chrome updates, those Adobe patches. I know we love to hit, you know, do it later. I don't want to do it right now, but it's critical that we keep our servers and our desktops and our laptops and our mobile devices updated and all of the third-party apps and software that go along with it. Clearly, it can be quite intrusive and it's a lot of work to do that constantly, but that is a pretty big vulnerability exploit that hackers are taking advantage of. They know that these vulnerabilities are not going to get patched on a timely basis, and they're going to take advantage of that. So patch, 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 update, update, update as soon as you can.
Good advice all around. So if you're looking at the top four vulnerabilities, remote desktop protocol compromise, that's almost half your problem. Phishing email, that's another quarter of it. And then vulnerability exploit and account takeover take up pretty much the rest of the space in the top four. So if you're a business leader, then the advice is not only patch, 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 as Dan said, but make sure that you're addressing or at least looking at those four potential attack vectors from a cyber criminal. And that's where you want to put your attention. Time for us to take a break, but a reminder that Cyber 24 is presented each week by our friends at Valcom. Valcom is a Utah-based IT solutions and services provider with a drive for getting IT right. From ironclad security to computing and beyond, Valcom's 35-plus years means they have the experience and the expertise to help your business from desktop to data center. Back with more on the Cyber 24 podcast presented by Valcom right after this. In every Oceans movie ever written, the Oceans team has to first take down the defense system. Hackers work the same way when breaking into your PCs. HP's SureRun Gen 2 keeps critical security protections up and running while hackers attempt to attack your PC. You can also use HP's SureStart Gen 5 and SureRecover 4 to self-heal and recover information after an attack. Secure your devices, data, and identity with the world's most secure and manageable PCs at VLCMTech.com/HP-partner. Don't you wish your kid's soccer team could have 12 goalies instead of one? Blocking malware, exploits, and ransomware is just like blocking a soccer ball. Sophos's InterceptX employs a comprehensive defense-in-depth approach to endpoint protection rather than simply relying on one primary security technique. It's 12 goalies instead of one. Ranked number one in malware protection, exploit protection, security effectiveness, and total cost of ownership, Valcom and InterceptX will protect your most vital information. So get some more goalies. Visit vlcmtech.com/intercept-x. That's vlcmtech.com/intercept-x. So in our first segment, we talked about the main attack vectors or the foremost popular that are being used to throw ransomware onto someone's system. And I think that's really good information for the business leaders and the governmental leaders who are among our primary audience here. Dan, you flagged something for us that Valcom has put together, the top seven ways to protect your organization against ransomware. And we'll throw this on our website at cyber24.us so the listeners can take a look. Just like to run through a couple of these and get your thoughts on them, both Dan and Anthony. The number one thing on the list is something that Anthony and I talked about just a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, multi-factor authentication. Tell me why that's listed at number one. Is that the silver bullet or at least as close to it as you might come? Dan.
It's one of the number one recommendations you can enable from a security perspective across your organization. Enabling multi-factor authentication on internal and external accounts exponentially increases the security of those accounts because a lot of ransomware attacks are a result of credential harvesting, where somebody's credentials are used to access a network or an account to launch a ransomware attack. And if you have multi-factor authentication enabled, you can basically significantly reduce those type of attacks.
Yeah. So if number one is make it twice as hard to get past your defenses, number two is make sure that if someone does get past your defenses, that you have backups in place. And this is the 3-2-1 rule for backups. And it says 3 copies of your data, 2 different media types, and keep 1 backup copy offsite. Anthony, preach to me the gospel of backups.
Oh, so important. So crucial. So I have been, prior to this life, I have been on the partner side of the house, and I constantly was working with organizations that had been either hit a vulnerability, got attacked, or whatever it may be, and they were dead in the water because there were no backups, right? So part of this, it talks about storing copies on 2 different types of media, right? And keeping even at least one of those backups offsite. Okay, so you do this rotation. You do a rotation. You can have daily, weekly, monthly, however it is that you want to do it. But the crucial part is you want to take one away. If something was to go haywire overnight, if there was to be a fire, if there was someone to get onto the machine and because they were able to break through some of your defenses and they were able to see that you were doing backups, the first thing I would do as a malicious actor is, once I had access, let's see if they have backups, boom, blow those away. I want to blow their backups away. I know now they have to pay the ransom because I've taken care of their backups. I've taken care of their data that they use every day on this server. And now they're hosed. They have to pay me to get it back. There's no other way. But wait, there is another way. I took one home. I've got a hard drive that I probably took offsite, or maybe I've got an offsite cloud backup solution, whatever it may be. I have another option. And so it is so crucial. If you are running an organization today and you do not run backup, I strongly, strongly recommend you reconsider. I also would say the same thing about point number one regarding multi-factor. Strongly reconsider. Put multi-factor in place.
We talked in the first segment about phishing as a big attack vector. And Anthony, you made the point that that is sort of the human element that can be exposed. So number four on this list, and I'm not going to go through each one of them, so we're skipping ahead a little bit here. Number four, have a robust email security solution in place that can identify emails containing links and documents that have malicious code and prevent those emails from reaching the end user. So this is, when it comes to potential phishing attacks, letting artificial intelligence or some type of technology eliminate or at least greatly reduce the ability for human error. Dan, give us some ideas to why that's something that every business should really have in place or strongly consider putting into place.
Yeah, because most of these phishing emails will have malicious links that are going to take you to a malicious website that will launch a ransomware attack, or there will be a malicious attachment to the document. And you open that document and you launch an executable that starts the ransomware attack. Clearly there are email security solutions out there that are using machine learning and deep inspection to identify these type of attacks. They're scouring the internet, collecting all of the valid links and bad links, and notifying you if the link is valid or bad, and also scanning those documents or launching those documents in a sandbox, ensure that they don't contain any malicious code that could, again, launch a ransomware attack. And so if you're not running an email security solution that has a component that can identify these type of attacks, especially ransomware attacks, you seriously need to consider it, because without it, you're very vulnerable.
Anthony, could you recommend a specific program like this? I'm looking at your hat and wondering if you've got any in mind or off the top of your head, so to speak.
You know what? I only know of one good one and a couple of okay ones. No. There's actually to Dan's point. It the key part is having one. As you've probably heard me mention over time, and being a friend of the pod, Sophos, absolutely, we have a solution here that is the email security component that can perform throwing banners on there and taking a look at this malicious activity, taking a look at these, rewriting these links and doing all of this kind of really cool stuff and some of the, you know, those things that have been spoken about, applying deep learning to this inspection and things like that. So absolutely, Sophos has one. I will also say that there are actually some other really good solutions out there comparable to Sophos that either you may have in play today, or that if you don't, I strongly also recommend getting one of those, especially when we start taking a look at this compromising threat vector of the users.
Yeah, that's a matter of sort of taking the human element out, as I mentioned. The final thing on the list, so the last two things on the list, one, I think Dan did a good job in the last segment of preaching the importance of backups and making sure that you have, or not backups, I'm sorry, patches, that you patch things, that you do the updates and things that you need to in a timely manner. But the last thing on the list is sort of the opposite of what we were just talking about, and that's not taking the human element out, but addressing the human element and sort of the vulnerability of gullibility, and that's providing security awareness training to employees. This is such a great place to start, I think, for every organization, because if you, even if it has a shelf life to it, even if people are more vigilant for a little while and it wears off, it certainly is something you can do immediately that can buy you some time to get some other things in place. Dan, why don't you give us just sort of your two cents here on why providing security awareness training is so essential for a business.
So security awareness training is really important because technology is not perfect. We've talked about firewall security and email security and endpoint security, but these technologies are not perfect. And eventually your employees are going to get exposed to a phishing email, or they're going to go to a malicious website because they clicked on a malicious link. There's a variety of attacks that your employees could potentially fall victim to, and that's where security awareness training plays a key role, because the last line of defense in your organization are your employees, and you want to make sure that they're well educated and they have the knowledge to understand and identify a potential attack. Again, whether that's phishing, a malicious link, a malicious website, what have you, that's really where the value of security awareness training comes in. Now, clearly, security awareness training isn't perfect. Repetition is the key, but too much repetition is bad as well. So you want to find a security awareness training solution that's right for your organization. You want to set up a cadence for training that's right for your organization. And if you implement it effectively, it will have an impact on lowering your risk posture and increasing your security posture of your organization.
Well said. Guys, we're running short on time, so I want to get to America's favorite segment, What's Cool This Week? And as we talked just before the show, Anthony wanted to make sure that he got to go first so that nobody would steal his great What's Cool This Week. So Anthony Boise from Sophos, you are up first. Anthony, what is cool this week?
So one of my opinions is that a cool thing that happened this week was that GMC announced the releasing, or at least the coming, electric Hummer. And the Hummer EV. And I think that's really cool. This EV looks really, really sweet. It's definitely got that Hummer touch, and it's packed full of technology, packed full of power, 0-60 in 3 seconds, 1,000 horsepower with 11,500 pounds of torque. And it's just a sweet looking vehicle. Price point's probably a little bit too high for me. I'm still definitely going the Cybertruck, but this is, in my opinion, this is definitely a cool thing that was announced and mentioned this week.
Yeah, just remember, one well-executed cybercrime and you could definitely afford it. So keep that in mind. all right, Dan, you are all set with what is cool this week. What you got?
Yeah, and I'm not going to default to Apple this time.
I don't know if you guys saw it, big news. PayPal is going to, in the near future, accept Bitcoin.
I did not see that.
That is a pretty big move for a major financial organization to make. I mean, PayPal does a lot of transactions. They're one of the biggest names in online transactions. And for them to be getting behind Bitcoin, that says a lot. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves and what that means for Bitcoin. But from what I read, after that announcement, the price of Bitcoin shot up again. So interesting, interesting in development in the financial sector realm with regards to Bitcoin.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. All right, I don't know if mine can compete with that. I would just say that as a communication professional, and the way that my career progressed, I started like right when social media was becoming a thing, right? Like when I first kind of moved from television broadcasting into more strategic communication, I was at an organization and helped them start their first Facebook page and Twitter and stuff. And then shortly thereafter, I like jumped and went into more of a management side where I didn't have as much hands-on. It was sort of, hey, we need to build a website, or we need a campaign for this. And so I'd point to the right person and they would go do that. And I was always sort of amazed, like, oh, that just got done. And that was fine. And now I find myself in a spot where I'm a little more of a one-man band, and I've had to try to figure some stuff out on my own. So this week, well, not this week, I would say in the last 2 weeks, I spent some time building the first website I've ever built. So, and you guys will both laugh because I didn't do it on like some super, like I didn't start with a blank thing and just code the whole thing out. I use probably the most user-friendly thing in the world when it comes to building websites. I use Squarespace. But you know what? I didn't have a website and then I had one, and I am the one who took it from that point to the other point, and I figured it out on my own. So to me, what's pretty cool, I guess you could say building your own website, or maybe just me. Maybe I'm just what's cool this week because I managed to pull that off. So I can be a little bit techy when need be, and I've actually figured out how to do it. So, you know, I was pretty proud to say that in something in the tech world, I started with nothing and then I built something, and that was pretty cool to me.
And the website looks good, by the way.
I appreciate
it. Everybody should check it out.
I appreciate it.
You did a good job. It looks really good. Professional. Nice.
Thank you. It'll have a short shelf life. It's for a political issue that means after November 3rd, it's no longer. So, but still, now I can say I've done it, and I can go and try to learn the next thing. And it was actually really interesting to me how many things I had to go learn because of that, right? It was like, okay, you're building the website, but now you've got to do these images. And now how do you make an image and a graphic and these? And there's so many different tools out there. I just felt like every day, well into the night, I was learning something new along the way. So that might be the thing that's cool too, is just keep learning new stuff, because it's kind of fun once you figure it out. All right, guys, that will take care of us for this week. I appreciate your time. Our special thanks to Dan Schuyler from Valcom and Anthony Boise from Sophos for being a part of the show again this week. As we wrap up this episode, I want to thank our sponsors at Valcom. By the way, gentlemen, this is episode 105, which is the last episode of season 5. So when we rejoin each other, we'll be into season 6. So that's a big milestone for us heading toward our 6th season. You know, at Valcom, you get much more than a dedicated IT retailer. They become an extension of your IT team, and we're so grateful to have them as sponsors for the show. So whether you have a startup or a large enterprise, Valcom has the technical, sales, and engineering expertise you need to make your business more effective and more productive. Check them out, vlcmtech.com, to learn more about Valcom's end-to-end solutions, the technology vendors they partner with, and more, like how to not get hit with ransomware. That's vlcmtech.com. Also want to thank our supporting partners, the Utah Department of Technology Services, the Kemp C. Gardner Policy Institute, the Utah Attorney General's Office, the Utah Department of Public Safety, and Secuvant. You can follow us on Twitter at cyber24_, or you can follow us on Facebook. Hey, hit us up in either place. Let us know what you think. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss on a future show, we're always looking for good ideas. And of course, you can rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Thanks, everyone, and stay safe online.